Hi, this is Dr. John Gray, author of Men from Mars, Women from Venus, and you're listening to the Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood.
Kick-Ass.
Whoa, that's kick-ass. Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, David here, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, which means I have a great guest, and this is someone that I've hung out with in different parts of the world and got to know, which has been pretty cool. He's got some amazing insights, as known as an awakening coach, writer, and a public speaker, and he's really brings a gift to the world, and you're gonna love this guy. He's really, really sharp. The author of 7 books, including a national bestseller, but his latest book is the one we're gonna be talking about a lot, Better Than Sex. But I'll introduce him in a second. I think it's time for, what do you think? I want to go back to a time when I was young, and the band that was playing when I was young, they wore very tight clothes, and I can't believe back then that we all dressed like this, but we did. That was just the way it was. Here we go. That takes you back. You know, I'm basking in a glow of Phoenix. I'm here at the Transformed Woman. It's a brand new event, and I'm really excited about it. You know, it's I don't do very many very deeply intimate programs, but this is a very, very small group of women. And we're looking at, Sandra Yancey and I are looking at developing a program specifically for women once a year called the Transform Woman. And, it's one of those processes where we get together and we build a program, invite a small group, work it, and then start to refine it for the next year. So again, keep your eyes open. And women, one of the hardest things for you to do is invest in yourself. So I want you to rethink about that. Think about investing in you. And another great investment is a book called Better Than Sex from my good buddy, Arjuna Arda. Well, here we are, this beautiful, beautiful, misty winter's day. And I'm looking out the window, and there's this crispness on the trees. There's this sort of gentle frost on the edges of all the trees as I look out my window. And what's more exciting than both the view and the trees is my guest, because this is someone that I have a secret love affair with. And that's not so secret. He knows about it, and I know about it, but you guys are just about to find out about it. So, Arjuna, are you there?
I'm right here, buddy. I'm right here, excited.
How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm really, couldn't be better. Life is wonderful. And we don't have too much frost on the trees where we are. It's been an extraordinarily warm winter in California, but it is nevertheless a beautiful winter day.
Yeah, you were just showing me outside your window, and it looked, you obviously, when people show me a view outside their window, it tells me a lot about, you know, the things that are most important to them. And obviously you spend a lot of time in the wilds, as it were, or in nature, right?
We live in a very small town. It's got 2,000 people. And it's a very nice place to live. We live in the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California, on the east part of California.
Well, just so you know, and just so I know that it may sculpt some of the conversation we have, this show goes out to about 200 countries, And so we'll hit 1 million downloads this month. So just so you got a sort of a read that there's a lot of people out there from all cultures, all walks of life. And before we get into just really chatting about what's going on for you, what you're excited about, I was just sort of reminiscing in my mind there as I was listening to your voice of the last time we met was in St. Martin, right?
St. Martin in the Caribbean. I've just got to add a little footnote. When you tell me this is going out to 1 million people, it's not exactly the way to put me at ease, you know.
Well, I didn't say it would go out to 1 million people. I said it was 1 million downloads this month as far as the show. The show has reached a
right.
So
yeah.
But so you can have a little breathing room there.
Okay. I've got to really say brilliant things now if it's going out to that many people.
Yeah. No nonsense. But, there's something about you when I watch you, and there's this grace that you kind of walk through life with. And, you know, we've hung out a few times and there, you know, I love observing people, but there just seems to be this, it's almost like you're floating sometimes, the way you walk, the way that you sort of look, the presence. I mean, every conversation seems to be one where you're 100% in it, as opposed to most people where their mind is wandering somewhere else. Am I making this up, or are you really sort of a grounded and present and just a beautiful connector?
Well, I think what's happened there, David, and it's very relevant to what we're talking about today, I think you've just very brilliantly given a testimony to your own quality of perception, you see, because, you know this old adage, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I think what we've just discovered is something that actually I've written about in my new book. It's called Inspired Certainty, and inspired certainty means that you have the capacity to look at another person in such a way with the eyes of love and the eyes of empowerment and the eyes of seeing the potential of somebody. So in a way, it doesn't really matter if I am that or not that. I mean, I'm sure I am that to some people, not to other people. What's beautiful, I think, what we've just heard, which is really a good reason for everyone to listen to your radio show, is that you see people that way and you bring forth their beauty.
Wow. That's I'm often not rendered speechless, but that I thank you very much. That's, and really, you know, I think, you know, when I look at, you know, why the show exists, and, you know, this has been a journey, it's very humbling to know there's people out there in the world, and I hear from them all the time from all different countries, and some people who don't have liberty and some people who live in a world there, you know, there's under the regime of dictatorship and have been taught to think a certain way. And I just in your opening remarks there, this the new book that you have, Better Than Sex, which is an amazing, I love the title, but you said to me that this was kind of what you were born to write. And I mean, you're a guy that's written 7 books. So, you know, this isn't your first rodeo. You've had, you know, national bestsellers, you know, you've been featured in O Magazine. So, you know, you're a guy that's very, very accomplished. But for a guy to turn around and say, look, you know, there was a book that I was born to write and here it is. You must be feeling pretty excited when you're holding that book up in your hands.
I feel very nervous, actually. You know, it's like being naked, because when this is actually a really good point that we can all tune into, that a lot of us in our lives, we do things that are in some way representing somebody else. You know, perhaps we work for somebody else, or perhaps we represent a certain point of view. But when you actually sing the song you were born to sing, when you play the sonata you were born to write, or when you act the part you were born to act, when you actually do the thing you were born to do, it's incredibly energizing, but also incredibly vulnerable. Because if people don't like your deepest gift, they're really not liking you. So you're putting yourself right on the edge. And what I've realized is when you really gather your courage and express the deepest gift you were born to give in your life, you get incredible energy, and you also get incredible vulnerability, and you shake to your core, because you're really, this is for real now. It's not a dress rehearsal. This is the real deal. And that's what happened for me with this book. It's like, it's really, I'm 56 years old. I've been teaching various kinds of, you could say, self-development and self-expression for all my life. And this is it. This book is really the summation of what I really know to be the formula that allows people to fully actualize themselves.
Do you feel, I'm going to go obviously delve into the book, and I want to delve in a little bit about the story of your life that makes you feel that this book is, you know, the realization of all the lessons you've had. And to let people know, I mean, you're a coach, a writer, you know, you're a public speaker, you know, really a somebody who's wakes up each day with a purpose of I believe, and I don't want to put words into your mouth, but, you know, to really have an impact, whether it's in one life or a million lives. I feel that, you know, you come from this deep heart of service. But do you feel like the book is a culmination up to this moment, and in the writing of this book, it's going to open up this whole new chapter for a whole new book that will be another realization, you know, because obviously your life is only, you know, you're only a partway through the life. Do you know what I'm saying? I just almost feel like, you know, it's almost like chapter two is about to begin.
Well, I think as we get more into what this is about, you'll see why this is a pretty definitive milestone, because I've really put together in a fairly concise, readable, hopefully very readable format. That's what a lot of people say. It's very readable and funny. That I've put together really the common sense essence of what it takes to live an extraordinary life. And it's actually not that difficult. It's not that difficult. It doesn't take a lot of the things we've been led to believe. You know, our culture tells us we need a lot of money. You need prestige, you need fame, you need, you know, you need the right kind of car, blah, blah, blah. But actually, there's a much more simple way to have unconditional fulfillment. And then the outer things maybe fall in place. You know, you end up with the perfect place to live. I live in a gorgeous place. But those are more like byproducts of something more essential. I think that's what we, you know, we can really get into today is what is the core? What is the core formula? What are the core ingredients? Which when you line them up, and they're not so difficult because they belong to you already, when you line up the core ingredients, what is it that allows you to be able to go to sleep every night and just go, you know, another perfect day? What is that? You know, what is that? And I think I've bumped into a few kind of obvious truths that were staring us in the face in putting this together.
Before we open the book, I want to just delve back into your past a little bit and just share a little bit about your, you know, the elevator version of your life. That you can, so that we can sort of get to know you as an author before we look at your work.
Sure. Well, everything really that I have done in my life was fueled by suffering, quite deep, the kind of deep suffering that you've got to do something radical about it or you're going to commit suicide. I was born into a family, God bless their cotton socks, where a lot of my relatives were in very deep suffering. There was several suicides in my family. There was mental illness. It was a British, you know, very intellectual family, very kind of highly refined. But that particular era in England after the war, 1950s in England, there was a lot of people who were very, very, very highly cultured, but there was just this incredible degree of mental anguish. And that was the situation I was born into. So you don't really evaluate your family objectively when you're a child. It's just that's your family, and beyond your family is the world, and that's the way they are is just the way life is. But when you get to be about 14, you differentiate from your family, and that's when for the first time you evaluate what you've got. That's the first time you can really look at the card you were dealt and see how many aces and how many twos you've got in your hand. Well, when I got to 14, I realized, holy smokes, relative to everybody else, I'm living in a lunatic asylum. I mean, you know, there was an incredible amount of drama. And so I realized I've got to do something. You know, several of my relatives have already committed suicide. You know, I'm either going to go crazy or I've got to find something so radical that it's not just window dressing. It's a complete remodeling of who I am. So I realized fairly quickly psychotherapy wasn't going to help. You know, it was the psychotherapists, at least at that time, were more crazy than the patients. So that wasn't a viable option. So I discovered meditation. You know, when I was 14, I learned meditation and that kind of thing, and really spent a couple of decades, really, from 14 to 34, following different teachers and teachings. I mean, I was sort of a serial monogamist, I suppose, in the sense that I would be with a teacher for 10 years and then switch to something different. When I was 34, I met a man, coincidentally in India, although what he taught me could have happened in New Jersey as much as it could have happened in India. I met a man who didn't really have a teaching per se. He didn't tell me to do something or repeat a mantra or anything. He simply asked me to pay close attention to my own nature. He said, okay, you're hearing sounds. Who is actually hearing them? You're feeling sensations right now in the body. Who or what is aware of those sensations? So he pointed my attention to questions that really apply to the present moment. When you see the movement of color and shape in this moment, who is aware of it? It didn't happen right away. It took a few days for the attention to really be sort of forced to turn upon itself, to look at my own nature. And then there was a moment out of time, a moment of recognizing infinity, of realizing that we do have our suffering, we do have our stories, we do have our likes and dislikes, our personalities, but that's only one dimension of who we are. Just a scratch below that, there is infinite silence. There is the dimension of us which has no beginning and no end. And that's been written about in every tradition, even to, you know, including the founding fathers of the United States. I mean, you can find references to this kind of realization in every culture. So in a nutshell, my teacher, as I would call him, his name was H.W.L. Punja. He asked me to return to America and to pass this secret on to my friends, which I did for a few years in a more conventional way of a teaching. But fairly quickly, I realized that accessing the infinity, having tastes of your true nature as limitless, as beyond fear, beyond death, that's actually only the beginning. It's relatively easy. If you're going to spend your life in a cave, you know, as a recluse, then that's enough. But if you actually feel a calling to make a difference, if you want to love deeply and be an incredible parent and make a contribution to the world and be confident and competent with money, if you want all of those things to blossom as well, it requires not just tasting awakening, but living it in every aspect of your life. And that's really what this new book is about. Better Than Sex, it's about how we can, it's time historically for us to shift from a hierarchical, patriarchal, traditional way of doing this, which is, you know, really carrying, many times it's carrying traditions over from the Orient. It's time for us to approach this in a very fresh way and to recognize that what we long for, you and I and everyone listening, what we really long for is right here. What we're longing for in ourselves and in each other is immediately available. The only thing that stands in the way is false assumptions about what is true and what is not.
Let's talk a little bit. I mean, because you know, you're awakening coaching and this idea of awakening, and I love the term. And excuse me. If we look at the opposite of that, then you know, you could use the term, well, you know, many people are asleep. If there's an awakening, then, you know, or at least, you know, drowsy, or maybe they're in a deep coma. But I want to talk a lot about that, because I'm obviously, as I walk through the world and called to do the work that I do, there's this idea. Like you, I believe that this isn't an overly complicated process to have this sense of awakening. But talk to me, why do you think so many people are asleep, or so many people at this point? I mean, 2014 feels like to me a year of stirring. I think your book couldn't have come out at a better time, where I almost hear in people something I haven't heard for a decade, where it's almost like this message, where people would look at it before and go, oh, that's all woo-woo BS, you know, that's bullshit, right? That isn't the case anymore. People are like, you know, even people who are ardent in their approach to, you know, completely away from anything like this, are starting to stir inside and ask a deeper question. But talk to me, why do you think so many people are asleep and or have been asleep for so long?
Well, I suppose, you know, let's just define the terms briefly so that we make sure we're you know, speaking clearly for everybody else. What I mean by awakening is simply a moment of realizing your true nature as limitless, and not intellectually. It doesn't mean you read a book and understand it. It means there is a moment where the attention points towards awareness, towards consciousness, towards who you really are. And you realize you are not a thing. You are more like a presence which has no boundaries and which is not really separate from everything else. So that's what I would mean awakening. I call it a moment because that's all it can ever be. Now, those moments can become so frequent that it becomes the flavor of your life, but it's always in this moment,
sure.
which is why I think it's very important to distinguish. When we're talking about this, I am not referring to the concept of enlightenment.
No. And by the way, thank you for the clarity, and I really appreciate that. But yeah. Even when you talk about this moment, and if I use the term, there may be a better term than asleep, but the fact that someone's never stepped into that moment, why do you think that is?
Yeah, I'm just going to come to it. So if awakening means to recognize that, then what is the opposite of awakening? It means to become fixated on things that die. Okay, everything's dying. I mean, in other words, to become fixated on things that exist in time. And that is actually the very nature of this wonderful, wonderful appearance that we've created. I mean, when you go to the movies, right, you go to the movies and you watch, this is actually a scene in the book. You go to the movies and you watch some really absorbing movie. If the movie's good, it's going to draw you in and you'll forget the fact that you're in the movie theater. And that's actually the point, you know, you want that to happen so that you can really have an incredible experience. Well, what's happened to human beings really, or I don't know if it applies to other species as well, what's happened to us for the most part is we're so drawn into this appearance of separation, this appearance of being a person who's born and who dies, that we've forgotten who we really are. And it's, in a way, that was the point, you see. When you create this, it's wonderful that we have this appearance of David and Arjuna who can be friends. If we just felt oneness, it would be quite boring. They'd just be like, blah, you know. But we have, and then, of course, when there's a polarity into masculine and feminine, there's attraction there, that's even more interesting. Like, wow, you know, I'm married to my wife, and there's Arjuna and Shyamali, like two separate people who can look at each other and sense the oneness underneath, but also feel the separation. Well, we've simply, you know, who knows how or why, but this appearance of duality has become so strong over thousands of years that attention gets lost in it and we believe the story. Let me just briefly illustrate this so that it becomes really clear. I have two children who are grown now. They're young adults, but when they were younger, my friend Pete Russell came to stay for the weekend. Pete wrote the book Global Brain and many other books. I'm sure you know him. So he came to stay for the weekend. He wanted a break. So I also needed a break from fathering. You know, I was kind of tired. So Pete played Monopoly with my sons. I went off and did other stuff. And Pete, my two boys, they had this Monopoly tournament for the whole day. Well, at one point, my younger son was probably six, I'm guessing. At one point, you know, they were shaking the dice, and my younger son landed on Pete's hotels in Park Lane and had to pay a lot of money. And my younger son jumped up and started, you know, he was crying, and he ran to his room and he slammed the door and he said, "I hate you all," because he had forgotten it was a game, you see. He was only six. He got lost in the game, so it became real to him. Now, by contrast, Pete didn't end up winning the game. My other son did. My older son won the game of Monopoly. But Pete was laughing when he lost. It was like, okay, great. We had a good time because he was aware that it was a game. Now, of course, my sons are grown by now. But that's a really good analogy. See, when you get lost in Monopoly to the point that you think you are the top hat or the racing car or the other objects, then it becomes really serious and it loses any kind of humor or playfulness, and it becomes a matter of life and death. It's important to have both perspectives. If you only know it's a game, it's a game, it's a game, it's a game, then you don't actually participate in playing very much. If you only know that it's about winning, 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 it becomes very serious and tense. So there's this wonderful dance in the middle where you know yourself to be free and you choose to participate out of art. And that's really what this book is about. It's about the embodiment of awakening, the embodiment of recognizing yourself to be free and then choosing to fully participate in this delightful dance of sexuality and family and gifting and creating and making money and all of the wonderful opportunities that life has to offer us.
Mm. You're such a, I could listen to you all day. I was at the movie house right there. I was drawn into the movie. Talk to me about the title, Better Than Sex. Obviously I love the compellingness of that. Can you talk about the choices or why that particular title?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. Well, you know, David, an important thing to know about awakening coaching, which is the modality that I teach, is that it's not really a theoretical approach. There's very, very little that's theoretical about it. It's practical. So it's a coaching method, and it has tools that, you know, it has a number of very specific tools that in a very reliable way guide people into awakening, allow them to return to awakening very, very easily when they want to, allow them to dissolve what gets in the way of living awakening. So it's very practical. So I travel around the world teaching, I teach weekends, you know, where people experience this for the first time. But I also teach trainings. I've trained 1,300 coaches to be facilitators of awakening. So about a year ago, maybe a little more, I was teaching a weekend in Vienna. It's probably 2 years ago. I was teaching a weekend in Vienna in Austria, the birthplace of Sigmund Freud and the home of Mozart and, you know, interesting city. So I was teaching a weekend, and on the Saturday, I taught them how to guide each other into awakening. It's a coaching method. So I'm not there as a teacher. I'm more there as a, you know, to show them how to be guides to each other. So they guided each other into awakening very beautifully. So everybody was having this wonderful experience of expansive consciousness and freedom and feeling the joy and well-being bubbling up from their deepest interiors, wonderful feeling. And then we did some other work in the afternoon with dissolving the resistance that arises to life, which keeps us very often trapped. Well, the next day we came back. It was Sunday morning. Everybody came back and they were all looking pretty good. And I said, good, well, you've had a night to sleep on it. So how is everything? You know, how has that awakening you tasted yesterday, how is it today? And people said the things people say. You know, they said, well, I feel the stress has dissolved. Somebody said, I feel a lot of love. You know, I feel full of creative energy and optimism. People said the things people say after they've really tasted their true nature. And then one of the women there, her name was Verena. She was a musician. She said, this is so wonderful. You know, so beautiful. I can't really do an Austrian.
Yeah, you know, no, it's good. Keep going. It's a good accent.
It's so wonderful, so beautiful. I feel so good in my body, so free. So it's better than sex. and I said to her, Verena, if you don't mind, I'm going to take that as the title of my new book, Better Than Sex. You know, because really, that's the thing. You see, why do we love sex so much? We love sex not to make babies. I mean, you know, I've had sex, I don't know how many times in my life, only 2 times did it make babies, you know, so we don't primarily love sex for babies, for making babies. We love sex because of what happens in sex, that you have this really intensity of energy in your body that probably leads to a feeling of expansion where at least for a few moments and maybe for longer, you completely forget your troubles and you forget your fear. And you're overcome with such energy and power that you feel liberated. You feel like, wow. Well, of course, until the man ejaculates, and then it's all over, and the snoring happens. But people love.
Hey, don't write a sex book, all right?
Yeah. People love. No, well, that's next. Anyway, people love sex because it takes them out of themselves, because they feel expanded. And there's very little else in the world that can match that. You know, I mean, bungee cord jumping, I don't think it's as good as sex, you know, or hiking or whatever. There's a few peak moments we have, but sex, if for most people, is a really peak experience. The only thing I know that is actually more energizing, more fulfilling, more intimate, more amazing is when you guide another human being into the recognition of their true nature, which is what we do in awakening coaching. And really, when you do that, it's better than sex. It's more intimate, more energized, more of a peak experience than sex. So I think it's a pretty accurate title, actually.
Wow, beautiful. I'm glad I asked the question because, you know, often people use sex in a title as a marketing ploy and to attract attention. But what a great, great story. And I think your accent's perfect. So you keep that one going. So let's open the book. And so here we are. We have this great book. This is a culmination of everything you were born to be. And there's a vulnerability that's so deep in here, a sort of a nakedness that exists within this book. Talk about, you know, and again, this is, I'm going to keep coming back and forth on different things. People listening right now who have this calling, and I think within each of us, there's probably a book or two or 10 lurking deep within us, a story that is yet untold that, you know, we feel this urge to share. Talk about that process of actually sitting down and writing a book. What is that like for you? Obviously, 7 books, but this book was going to, I think you knew in advance this was going to be your greatest work. I mean, is that true? Or did it just sort of emerge?
Well, I think you probably know that story of Michelangelo, who was asked how he creates the statues, including the David, you know, which is in the Accademica in Florence. And Michelangelo said, well, I don't create the statues. They are already there inside the block of marble. I just have to chip away the superfluous marble and the statue is revealed. And indeed, in the Accademica, there are these statues there that are called the slaves. I forget the Italian word, but they're called the slaves because they are half-formed statues where they were never finished. So there's part of the marble block is still there and the slaves are kind of breaking out of the marble. And I think it's very much like that for all of us, you know, and I really mean all of us. It's not that some people are creative and some are not. We're just creative in different ways. All of us, we have all of us. Every single person has the unique gift they were born to give. Tragically, I'm sorry to say, not everybody actually gets to give their unique gift because of conditioning, because of fear, because of ideas of should and shouldn't, because of feeling I'm not good enough. All of these things can be addressed very easily, but many people don't really give the gift they were born to give. And so their life is spent in envy and regret and a feeling of sadness and often nostalgia. But when you do discover the gift, it's like it lives you. You know, you don't do anything, you relax and you allow that to give itself through you. So particularly with this book, it was really just a matter of allowing it. It clearly wanted to be born. So I just took the time to allow that to happen. And the particular process I go through is I always start, if you're interested, this is just a little, you know, insider's trick here, but I always start with the spoken word. I start everything with the spoken word. So either I go for a walk with a voice recorder and talk, or I'll speak it to somebody else. And then that gets transcribed and then that gets seriously edited to become, you know, polished. But I think if anybody wants to create, at least to create words, I think if it flows easily for you sitting down at the computer, fine. But if you experience any kind of blockedness, I think the solution is to walk and talk, because when your body's moving, the energy's flowing. Also, just the act of walking, it connects the right and left hemispheres of your brain, so things flow more easily. Incidentally, you mentioned that I do coach people. I've trained 1,300 coaches who have all kinds of specialities. Every coach I've trained has their own niche. And my speciality, the people I coach, are creative people. I coach people to create books and to create new products and to create software and and movies. I coach people to make a difference in the world. That's what I love to do. So I've actually coached many people to write their own books and using these kind of methods.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you and come play in your beautiful world, how would they do that? Just let people know that before I sort of delve into this book with you.
Well, I've got my own website, which is arjunaarda.com. And there's also a website about the work, which is called awakeningcoachingtraining.com. Three gerunds there, awakeningcoachingtraining.com. You can go to either one. They're kind of linked to each other. And there's a lot of video, and there's a lot of free resources you can check out and go find out about this approach. And then if you want to go deeper, there are ways you can do that. You can contact a counselor. We have admissions counselors. You can contact a counselor, and they will advise you on the best way to enter into what we're doing.
Mm. And just Arjuna, you're A-R-J-U-N-A, and Arda is A-R-D-A-G-H. And all the links will be on our show notes, as will the link to his great, great book, which I urge you all to get and read. So just go to thekickasslife.com and to the show notes there, and you could be able to find this book. So something you just said a second ago, Arjuna, which I don't know if I'd ever realized it as you were sharing that wonderful story. I was thinking, you know, you talked about your hardship growing up, and you started the call really with this. You used the term at 14, sort of, you know, like living in a lunatic asylum. And so many people who seem to live their gifts seem to have gone through great adversity. I'm not saying everyone has to, but it's funny, isn't it, how life throws us this deck of cards often, where you talked about, you know, whether you got aces or twos. And a lot of people who had these journeys that were very, very tough and very, very hard, I find often end up being called or discovering this other path. Do you find any correlation in that? Is it something you notice as well?
Yes, well, it really, what you're describing, it's drawing our attention to the word conscious, you see. Any activity that we do can be done unconsciously or consciously. A really good example of this, actually, is being a man. I'm my next book that I'm writing just now with John Gray, who you know as well. John and I are writing a book called Conscious Men. So, you know, half of the planet, approximately, slightly less than half of the planet, are men. But there's a difference between unconscious and conscious masculinity. So you could be born into a very functional family. You could be born where there's a lot of money, everybody's happy, everybody's getting along, and you could just grow up to be naturally a very functional person because that's how you were born. It wouldn't necessarily be a conscious functionality if you were just born with it. It would just be your genes, you see. On the other hand, if you're born with great dysfunction in some way, and through practice, through intention, through sculpting your own life and your own destiny, if you consciously create what otherwise would have been automatic, there's something additional, something special comes through the consciousness of it. So let's say being loving to a woman, right? Treating a woman in a loving way, which is, I would say, one of the marks of conscious masculinity. It's very different. Men who were born without that and had to cultivate it for themselves, it has a different quality than a man who's just living that way automatically. So that's the benefit, actually, of suffering. That's the great blessing of being born into a situation with suffering, is that you either you're going to just be drowned under by the forces that you have inherited, or you're going to find your way out of it. And by finding your way out of it, the conscious element adds something extra that would not have been there unless you'd had to create it on your own.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful. So we've opened the book. We get a sense of where this was born. And I love the Michelangelo description. Talk a little bit about, let's just share a couple of the lessons within the book, because there may be people right now listening in a country where access is impossible. They may be able to access the internet, but they may not have access for a number of reasons. So let's just give a couple of lessons, a taste of what sure. the discovery is for them, and then also to allow those people who are right now sitting on the fence to get to Amazon or go to this link and make sure they pick up this book.
Sure. Well, let me give you a little kind of bird's eye overview of the book. So the book is divided into essentially four, you could say five sections. And I'll just briefly mention what they are, because it will really give you a sense of if this book would be interesting for you. The first section really is stripping away all of our assumptions about what awakening and spirituality means, taking it back to basics. So we talk about the first place to start with this really is with you, with longing. What is your intuition of what is possible? What is your intuition of your own potential? What is your intuition of the potential of life? Most of us, we have an intuition of our capacity to love. Most of us, we have an intuition of our capacity to give something great. I'm not going to take so much time now. We can demonstrate this very clearly. People do have very well-developed intuition of what could be were it not for these unexpected psychological contractions which happen to all of us. So we start with that. From there, we can talk about what is awakening. Awakening is very, 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 very simple, ridiculously simple. It's been co-opted, unfortunately, by quite complex religions and spiritual traditions, which have all sorts of strange beliefs and rituals around it. But the essence of awakening is profoundly simple. It simply means to be able to pay attention to your own truly subjective nature, beyond thought, beyond reactive feeling, beyond body sensation, to be able to pay attention to who you really are. We also then examine the fact that awakening has been held for thousands of years in these hierarchical and mostly patriarchal frameworks. So now we turn our attention to coaching. Well, what is coaching? Coaching is an incredibly revolutionary breakthrough that happened only about 20 years ago when Thomas J. Leonard saw the potential of coaching from sports and shifted it over to life coaching and then to executive coaching and all kinds of other coaching. So what happens when we bring this coaching modality, which is really an anti-hierarchical relationship? You see, a coach is saying, you could win the gold medal. I couldn't win the gold medal, but you could, and I'm going to support you to do that. That's anti-hierarchical. The coach is saying, you're better than me, right? But I can support you. I know how to support you. That's the opposite of a hierarchical relationship. So what happens when we bring awakening and coaching together? What happens when we explore spirituality in an anti-hierarchical relationship? So then the next part of the book is called Innate Brilliances, and we cover seven simple qualities which anybody can cultivate. You don't have to be quotes enlightened or something like that. Anybody can cultivate these seven qualities which allow them to become an excellent facilitator of awakening to anybody else. And we can maybe briefly, we can cover those qualities if you like. Then from there, we go into a little bit more practical thing. Okay, so now we've hopefully established that spiritual inquiry, spiritual awakening, and embodied spirituality, which means really making a fantastic difference in the world and having spectacular relationships and really living everything to the full, all of this is actually much more possible and available than we realize. So then we talk about, okay, so how do we do this? What does it mean to get coached? What does it mean? What kind of applications does it have? We talk about applications in relationship, in business, in all sorts of ways. And how do you become a coach? And then the next section of the book, section four, is really all the questions that people ask. That people have a lot of questions about this. Is it the same for men and women? Is awakening the same as what's been called enlightenment? Is it ethical to charge money for something like this? Who's qualified to do it? Is this the same as psychotherapy? Is it okay for everybody to do it? Are there some people who should not be coached in this way? We go through all of these questions that people have. So that gives you an overview of the book. It's really a very practical sort of manifesto for how easily we can support each other in not just making cosmetic changes to the appearance of our lives, but how we can fundamentally support each other to tap into the source of all well-being and creativity and love that we so much intuit and long for.
Beautiful. Why don't we look at the seven simple qualities? Because I think it would be a really beautiful way for us to sort of tie a bow on the show and give people this idea that, because that's why I love it. I think this type of journey is simple. It's not overly complicated. And there are things that I think can help people listening right now make an adjustment today. And then, you know, as they reach out to this work and use it as a guide for them to sort of, you know, to sort of delve deeper, these simple qualities are something they could be aware of in this moment, right?
Yeah. So you'd like me to give you a little brief overview of each one?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Give me a time frame for doing that so I can...
Typically we go 45 minutes. We're at 42. I'm going to run a little longer because I think this is really important. So why don't we give it another, 6 minutes? Is that good?
Wow. Okay. Well, I think in that case, I should just really literally label them because I won't go into much detail. Okay. Well, let's do that. So the first of these qualities is called inspired certainty. And you've definitely experienced this before. Inspired certainty means that you have a certainty about somebody else's potential more than they have themselves. Really simple example of that was when I mentioned in the book, when I was in my early 40s, for the very first time I learned to ski. And I ended up in the wrong group. So I ended up going up on top of the mountain with a young New Zealand ski instructor who really just didn't buy the story that I couldn't do it, right? He just said, oh, it's easy, just lean here. So I ended up going down a black diamond with almost no skiing experience. And I was able to do it, not because he taught me massive amounts of skiing instruction. He just communicated to me such a certainty, such a confidence, not in his own abilities, but in mine, that it became infectious. Now, that quality of inspired certainty is a really important quality to anybody becoming an effective coach, to bringing forth the brilliance in somebody else. It's to be able to look at somebody and see their brilliance, see who they truly are, deeper than the story, and bring it forth. I'll go fast here because I know we've got a little bit of time. So number two is called absolute presence. All of these qualities are illustrated with stories of people who have cultivated the qualities themselves. Absolute presence simply means the capacity to be with another human being without distraction, which means without external distraction, like cell phone, etc., but also without internal distraction, which means thinking about the next thing you want to say or do.
Arjuna, don't rush. I don't mind going a little longer. I'll just I'll trim up the intro and the outro so that this... I want people to really be able to grasp this from you.
Okay, great. The third quality is called radical awakening. It's very simple. It means that you learn methods whereby you can guide somebody from preoccupation with thoughts and feelings and drama to the recognition of their true nature, I would say in less than 10 minutes. If it takes more than 10 minutes, there's something unnecessarily complicated. So radical awakening, it's actually been referred to in Tibet with the term pointing out instruction. Radical awakening means that you are able to effectively guide someone else into a direct recognition of their true nature as without boundaries, without birth, without death, as freedom itself. The fourth of these is called radical releasing. And radical releasing addresses why do we have tastes of awakening and then appear to lose it? Why do we have tastes of freedom where we feel empowered, we feel we can do anything, we feel that we are full of love and full of creativity, and then we appear to lose it? Why is that? So you might think, well, it's because of thoughts, negative thoughts. You might think, no, it's because of negative feelings. You might think, no, it's because of my mother-in-law. You might come up with a whole catalog of reasons why you lose presence. Well, what we've discovered after years of experimentation is that there's only really one thing that gets in the way of you resting in who you truly are. There's only one thing that actually stops you from being your most expanded potential, and that is resistance. It's not the thoughts, it's the resistance to the thoughts. It's not the feelings, it's the resistance to the feelings. So quickly we learn there actually is no such thing as negative energy. It's a mythology. There isn't positive and negative energy. There's just energy that we resist, and when we resist it, it becomes stuck and perverted. And we can experiment with that for ourselves. You know, anger is not a negative energy. It's negative when you push it down, it becomes violence. But anger in itself is just a lot of energy. And grief or despair, that's not negative. That's very good to feel that sometimes. It takes you deep in yourself. It takes you into reflection. It only becomes negative when it's resisted. So we have a very simple method called radical releasing, which doesn't mess with your experience. It simply relaxes resistance. It's a way that your life can return to flow. So when something arises that you might have judged as negative or undesirable, it's just allowed to be experienced and to pass through. But again, this is not a concept. We're not teaching philosophy here. We're teaching methods that absolutely reliably work every single time. The fifth quality is called embodiment practice or empowerment practice. Let's call it empowerment practice is really the word we use. Empowerment practice means exactly the right little change that you need to make that a coach can give to a client, the tiny little change that the client needs to make in order to open up new pathways of creativity. So it's great to take the resistance off. Now you feel more free, but your life has been governed by habits. You're used to behaving in a certain way. Other people are used to you behaving in a certain way as well. So an empowerment practice is something that it's a small little shift you make for a few minutes a day, but it opens up a new channel of thinking, of behaving, so that this freedom you experience as your true nature is now no longer latent. It becomes actualized in the way that you deal with life and with people and with money and with children and with every aspect of being human. The sixth innate brilliance is called midwifing the unique gift. And that means the possibility to recognize as a coach, to recognize within your client that there is something that love itself wants to give through them. Something is wanting to poke through the concrete of the personality like a small bud of grass poking up through the asphalt. A good coach can see that and draw it forth, can recognize there is a quality, a beauty, a unique gift that comes through you in the way that it comes through nobody else, and a good coach can bring that forth. The seventh innate brilliance is called spontaneous creation, and it's the consciousness version of quantum mechanics, of quantum physics. It means teaching a client how to create energy out of nowhere. Teaching a client how to spontaneously create energetic frequencies that did not exist before. So instead of trying to become happy by rearranging the furniture of your life, by getting the right house, the right money, the right spouse, the right everything, it means that you get happy by learning how to vibrate happiness out of nothing. Like how an object can appear and disappear in the vacuum state, a subatomic particle can appear and disappear In the same way, we can actually learn how to vibrate energies out of nothing, and then your life just rearranges itself to become the embodiment of that energy, just like iron filings rearrange themselves around a magnetic field. Ah, those are the seven innate brilliances.
Wow. Let me repeat them for everyone so they hear it one more time. Inspired certainty, absolute presence, radical awakening, radical releasing, empowered practice, midwifing the unique gift, and spontaneous creation. Hey, you know, I can't believe this time went so quickly. We're definitely going to have you back, Arjuna. And
lovely.
A quick question for you. Are you heading to Croatia in July? I know that.
I am, yes. I'll be there.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're just seeing if we can make that work. We've got my father is, he's gone through a lot of health challenges, so he may be coming over around that time. So if that's the case, I won't be going. But if not, I look forward to spending time with you in Croatia. Actually, it'll be my first time there, so that's going to be...
Beautiful.
Yeah. And before we wrap it up, I want to ask you two questions real quick. The show's called The Kick-Ass Life. When you describe a kick-ass life in your way, how do you describe living a kick-ass life?
Giving the gift. You know, it's like... The secret that everybody knows but not everybody is willing to fully surrender to is that we are not really here for pleasure. Pleasure is the booby prize. It quickly fades. We are here to give the gift. And when you tap into the gift you were born to give and you fully deliver it every day, that's kick-ass. There's really nothing comes close to the kick-ass quality of giving the gift you were born to give.
That's so beautiful. And lastly, is there any last, anything you want to leave with the audience listening? Any final words?
Yeah, very briefly, I'd like to make, just to wrap up, I'd like to make, and I think, a really valuable distinction between principle and technique. What we've talked about today are principles. Principles which, once we recognize them, they're universal. For example, understanding that what keeps you separate from yourself is only resistance. That's a principle. Or recognizing that who you are is always here because it's what's experiencing anything anyway. These are principles. Now, we've made these into techniques, which we call awakening coaching. The techniques we've packaged together may be for some people, may not be for other people. The technique can easily become dogmatic or can become institutionalized, but the principle is what sets you free. So hopefully, dear friends listening, wherever you are, hopefully you've been able to tap into some principles today, which you can call your own. So they're not belonging to some guy called Arjuna Arda. They're actually principles of reality, which you can own. And that actually is liberating in all kinds of interesting ways.
Arjuna, thank you for your gift. And I again, this time flew. We're about 10 minutes over my normal time, which is very rare I ever do that. But your message is so beautiful. So important isn't even the right word. It's just it's time for a lot of people to hear the simplicity of this type of thinking that it's a choice to embrace. And I just feel that the way you've articulated this is just in a very beautiful form, and Michelangelo would be proud.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you, David, and I really want to return to where we began, that I really bow to your ability to bring forth the beauty in people. It's a wonderful gift you have.
Thank you. I told you he was fun, didn't I? He's just a great guy, great all-around person, just a very, very light human being. Light being, he gives off a great light, but light, you know, it's easy to be around him, and he's always constantly giving to the world. So again, get the book, have a read, and I hope you took some great lessons from this great guy, you know. And I love just hanging out with him, and he's very, very easy to be around. So, you know, I thought we'd sort of have one more song, and same band, and let's keep it going with these tight clothes and these very, very, you know, open shirts with chest wigs and tight beards. Time. Yep, we're staying alive down here in Phoenix. And, you know, I want to just thank you, those of you that have just got hold of the new show and really supported it. Thank you so much. Again, you know, there's going to be so many great stories, so many great lessons. Whether you're in the profession of network marketing or not, there's going to be something in there for you. I promise you, it's going to be 90% personal growth. Stories that really, really will make you think about how you can transform your life. So that's what it's all about. So thanks for that. Thanks for supporting the show. And again, I just feel so blessed. I feel so like this year is going to be the year. Don't forget, those of you that want to join us and at Amplified Island Adventure, we're going to be doing an adventure trip in July. And there's a good bunch of you already who have signed up and paid and you're on your way. And again, invest in that. Come and have an adventure with me. I tell you, we will crack your heart open, fill it full of good stuff. You'll be at a fly home. And I tell you, you're going to see a shift in the way you see the world, a shift in the way you show up in the world, and you're going to have one of the greatest weeks on my private island. We're going to do some great adventures. We're going to help and really serve our local community, and we're going to learn some things about our own life that's going to take us to the next level. And don't forget, I will be in Australia in May. I'm doing 3 programs, 1 in Sydney, 1 in Perth, and we're doing 1 in Brisbane. So again, if you want to come and work with me in Australia, please look for those events. So much going on. And I'm here in Phoenix training right now with the wonderful Sandra Yancey, the CEO and founder of eWomen Network. And again, if you haven't looked at eWomen Network as a resource for you to join with other women, have a look. And with that being said, I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.